Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Jeremy. Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. We got a few emails from listeners tuning in from France yesterday, and we also got one from a friend in Spain, where it's getting quite warm. This is just on the back of the weather forecast there and the reports from London and elsewhere. Listen to you guys in Dea Vieja. I think that's the correct pronunciation, but they'll correct me if I'm wrong. Southeast Spain, where we're having extremely hot weather. I moved here and bought a house last month. 39 degrees on Monday, 29 degrees today. We're expecting 40 plus next week. Will you please warn any listeners planning holidays here to be aware of dangerously high temperatures? That's from Joan. So there. We were actually out this morning, out in Dunleary again, in the build-up to Marion Keys on Friday, worrying about the heat and would it be too warm in the room we've chosen. And Ronan was out there and he put on the air conditioning and we got out a compass to see the aspect of the room, and it turns out that it's facing north, so we should be fine. The sun won't be shining directly in, and then with the air con and maybe a couple of fans with buckets of ice, we should be okay. We should be okay. Did you see the super strawberry moon last night? There's a lovely picture I'm looking at here, and it's the full strawberry supermoon rising behind Ballycotton Lighthouse in East Cork. And it was posted by Keane O'Regan, and it's picture perfect. It's amazing. It's beautiful because the moon is to the left, and then the lighthouse in the lights there is red, and the moon is sort of orangey reddy, that burnt orange colour that was very popular in houses about, what, 20 years ago. Anyway, it's a big moon. It's a big moon. It's called super because it's a full one and it's close to Earth. And it's called a strawberry moon because it's harvest time. That's what they say. And I suppose it's strawberry time as well. Had some lovely Wexford strawberries last night. Delicious. The other thing that's important about the strawberry super moon or the super strawberry moon is that according to astrologers, the strawberry moon allows room for luck, love and prosperity, making it the perfect time to manifest your greatest desires. It's putting it out there. It's not manifesting things. You put it out there. It's a bit like The Secret, where you wrote something that you wanted and stuck it up on the fridge. Now you manifest it and it will happen. You have to put it out there to the universe. Well, Nathan Collins obviously put it out there to the universe. What a goal. Did you see that last night? Ireland versus Ukraine, 1-1 in the end. But Nathan Collins' goal, it was just spectacular. One of the best goals ever scored by a Republic of Ireland player, I would say. And he came from you know, he was centre back, so he's a defender. He came from behind, intercepted a pass from a Ukrainian player. It looked like he could have passed it. I think you could say he beat four players and scored with the outside of his foot. It was just Roy the Rover stuff. And I was just reading BBC Sport online, and they do a sort of a, you know, kick by kick sort of coverage of it. And this is what they were saying last night. The halftime whistle goes and the Republic of Ireland lead thanks to that fantastic solo goal by Lionel Messi. I can never get his name right. Lionel Messi. Sorry, I mean Burnley centre-back Nathan Collins. But it was Messi-like. It was just spectacular. So he obviously manifests that, as did Sam from Monkstown. He obviously manifests. Did you hear about this? He's 20. He's from Monkstown in Dublin. He was at the Killers, a band, Mrs., who played in Malahide Castle last night in front of 30,000 people. He held up a sign, which is the equivalent of manifesting it. Can I play drums with you? That's what the sign read. Can I play drums with you? And Brandon Flowers, which is a great name, who's the lead man in the Killers, said, yeah, come on up here, come on up here. And they got Sam up, and Sam knocked it out of the park. He knocked it out of the Malahide Castle Park. And you could see the big, huge smile on Brandon Flowers' face, knowing that there was something special happening, because there was this 20-year-old guy playing drums with his heroes. It was just one of those moments, again, very special. So well done to Sam from Monkstown. That's great. Other good news that might make you smile. Ireland has been ranked the second most peaceful country in Europe and third in the world, according to the latest Global Peace Index. Sometimes when you're watching the news, listening to the radio, reading the papers, you think it's all doom and gloom. Anyway, that's good, isn't it? And it's odd, not odd at all, but it's telling that whenever we speak to people and interview people here, refugees, people in direct provision, and you ask them why Ireland? And the thing they always say is peace. Peace, peace, peace. It's a peaceful country, and wherever they've come from isn't a peaceful place for them, and they yearn for peace. So let's see, get the details on it. It's produced by the Institute for Economics and Peace. It ranks 163 independent states. Iceland has been ranked the most peaceful country in the world, followed by New Zealand and then us, Ireland. And Denmark, Austria, Portugal, Slovenia, Czechia and Singapore complete the top 10 list. And Iceland once again tops the list in Europe, followed by Ireland, which is up from 7th place in the region last year. So that was up with a bullet, as they say in the charts. That's good news, isn't it? Bad news is that there's, and you heard this on news reports today, there's a shortage of flakes for 99s. Cadbury's parent company said it was working hard to resolve distribution issues, which one seller called a nightmare. And I see BBC News are trying to answer that perennial question. Why is a 99 ice cream called a 99? And they have this one theory. In the days of the monarchy in Italy, the king had a specially chosen guard consisting of 99 men. And subsequently, anything really special or first class was known as 99. And that's how 99 Flake came by its name. That's what Cadbury said. Now, we spoke to a guy years ago who worked out in Coolock in the Cadbury's factory there. Frank, I think, was his name, if my memory serves me correctly. And he told us, and I've told you this before, but I'll tell you again, that the reason it was called 99 was the flake, that was its sort of product number. So if you have a production line and you've all sorts of things been made, like flakes and twirls and whatever else Cadbury's make, dairy milk chocolate, that each one had a number. And when eventually they made the flakes for the ice creams, they were up to item 99 or product 99, and that's how it got its name. That's it. I know it's a good story. Frank told it well back in the day, so I'm sticking to that one, not the story of the Italian king and his 99 men. Somebody, Richard says, very un-Irish goal by Nathan Collins. A good Leixlip man too, says Richard. Yeah. We have to get over that, saying when things are good, that's very un-Irish. It was a brilliant goal, brilliantly executed. I want to read this to you. It's a bit long, but I want to read it to you. It was a post by singer-songwriter James Vincent McMorrow. And the reason I want to read it to you is because it's very honest. And I think a lot of people will identify with what James Vincent McMorrow says in this piece. And I think it was a brave thing to do. But I think he'll help an awful lot of people by doing what he did. So bear with me on this one. It's a post online from James Vincent McMorrow. You remember he did that concert in the Ivy Gardens during lockdown. And there was only a handful of people at it, but it was a moment. Anyway, he says, hey everyone, just wanted to share some stuff with you all. First off, it's 2 weeks until The Less I Knew comes out. That's his new album. I love this album so much so that I've decided I'm going to do this one differently and take a step back from social media press promo. Which is odd, I guess. Right at the moment I should be most visible, I disappear. But what I've realised is that I love making music and I really don't love the process of releasing it. I've never been so good at it. In fact, people who work with me might argue I'm pretty bad at it. I just don't like the idea of selling myself. I don't know how to do it. All I know is how to make music. And honestly, it does and has broken my heart over the years when I realise music and it's maybe misunderstood. When I made music and it's been misunderstood. So me stepping back from it is me saying that I don't want my heart broken again. I can't control the outcome of anything, but I can control how I interact with the world. See? Not being able to control the outcome is a thing I've been struggling with my whole life. So much incredible stuff has happened in my life, but I've missed it in the moment because I'm constantly focused on what isn't working or what I've done wrong. It took me about 7 years to realise that I had a proper mental breakdown in 2012 after the first album. At the time, I just kept pushing and pushing through things and compartmentalising it all. Maybe people can relate to all of this. Anyways, I don't want to miss the moments again. I've said it a lot over the years, I'm not well built for a lot of aspects of music. Truth is, I'm not well built for a lot of aspects of life in general. I suspect a lot of people aren't, but they feel the same pressure I have to build an aspirational narrative in the hopes that maybe it'll become real. It's exhausting. I made this album because I needed to reconnect with parts of myself I'd lost along the way. I did that, I believe. Everything I'm creating is the best work of my life. I'm at a point in my career where I can and should be making decisions for myself based on my own mental well-being and not the pressure to sell. Obviously, I'm not shutting off completely. People on the team will be posting on my behalf. Right now feels like the beginning of something new and exciting for me and hopefully for us together. And I would urge anyone who feels that pressure to be on a track they're on, if it doesn't feel right, if you have the power and opportunity to pause, then do pause. It's powerful stuff. By coincidence, we're speaking to a man who's done just that. His name is Mutzi. He's a German guy. He's decided to walk through over 40 countries in 5 years. And it was because he was on a path that he decided didn't suit him. So now he's walking through 40. And I suppose a lot of people don't have the luxury. They may be in that situation where they want to take a step back, but they don't have the luxury because of mortgages, family, commitments, all of that sort of thing. But it's a nice message there from James Vincent McMurrow. And I think, as I said, he'll help an awful lot of people by putting that out there on social media. Now, after 4 o'clock, still on music, we have 80s icon Holly Johnson from Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Now, there's two names that'll sort of get memories going for people. 1984 was the year, which is nearly 40 years ago, when Relax, Two Tribes and The Power of Love, and I think Welcome to the Pleasure Dome as well, were all hits. They spent more weeks at number one that year than any other act, and they broke all sorts of records for music, and those records still exist. They're up there with the Beatles. At one stage, they had number one and number two in the UK charts when it mattered that you had number one and number two. Anyway, just to get you in the mood, we won't play anything from Frankie Goes to Hollywood. We play a bit of Holly on His Own. This is Love Train. Good afternoon. When you think about it, the stir that that created back in 1983-84 and how the world has changed since then, nearly 40 years on, Love Train still sounds great. And on the 99, Get Smart, the lead agent in the TV show in the 60s, his female partner was called 99 because she was the 99th agent. So your theory of the product number could be correct. It wasn't my theory. It was something that Frank from Cadbury's and Coolock told us back in the day. And Tom says, further to your discussion yesterday about sentient machines, yesterday I had dealings with two very well-meaning and encouraging parking pay machines. One told me, change is possible. The other said, please take your ticket and change. Very good. Manifest it, put it out to the universe, Tom. Kay Foley and Kelly, great memories of meeting Holly and his band members in Kilkenny in November of 1984, sipping a coffee in a local cafe called Mull Halls. We starstruck teenagers, so excited, got their autographs, no selfies back then. Great memories, lovely guys. Cheers. We've through our research, we've worked it out that they stayed in a castle in Carlow. I wonder, was that when they were staying in that castle and then probably ventured out on a day trip to Kilkenny and that's where you met them? We'll ask them anyway. We'll ask them about that. We better tell you about our Reeling in the Ears quiz. We are looking for two of you to come on and answer three questions each on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And there is a prize. And this week, all the prizes are from the North Mayo region. Today, the winner will receive a great prize, a two-night stay with B&B in the Ballina Manor Hotel, right in the heart of Ballina town. It's located along the Wild Atlantic Way. The four-star Ballina Manor Hotel has stunning views of the River Moy, an ideal backdrop for relaxation over lunch or afternoon tea, and the perfect location from which to explore all Ballina has to offer. Enjoy dinner on a night of your choice in the Ridgepool restaurant overlooking the famous River Moy. You'll also enjoy a private surf lesson for two with the 7th Wave Surf School in nearby seaside town Enniscrone, where miles of golden sands meet the wild Atlantic Ocean. And you get your 50 euro voucher from Ballina Chamber, shop local, so you'll be able to spend some money in there as well. Northmayo.ie for more information. Northmayo.ie. Okay, two people after 4 o'clock. Here's your qualifying question. As the weather heats up, there's a shortage of flakes which go into ice cream cones. What is a cone with ice cream and a flake traditionally called? There you go. 0818715925. What is a cone with ice cream and a flake traditionally called? 0818715925. Good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, our next guest has embarked on an amazing expedition. Probably should be called an odyssey. Crossing through 40 countries, powered solely, pun intended, by his feet. Carrying only the bare essentials of his camping, sleeping equipment and food, Karsten Rink is being accompanied by his four-legged friend, Lottie. Karsten goes by the name Mutsa, and his adventures can be followed on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram under the name Mutsa, M-U-T-Z-E, on tour. And Mutsa joins us now on the line. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Fantastic.
Where are you?
I'm between Coleraine and Ardercliffe.
Yes.
Right now in Northern Ireland.
Yes.
And I'll move on tomorrow to McGillican Point to get on the ferry to leave Northern Ireland and enter the Irish Republic.
And you will land in Rathmullen?
Greencastle.
Oh, Greencastle, right. Is that near Rathmullen?
No. Rathmullen is... No. That's another 40 kilometres of walking.
You see, that's the thing. Because when you're in a car, 40 kilometres doesn't mean much. But when you're walking, it's a big deal, isn't it? Where have you been already before you landed in Northern Ireland, Mutsa?
I started off my first last year and I walked over Eastern Germany, across the Czech Republic, Germany again, walked across the Netherlands, Belgium, Luxembourg, Northern France, Southern England, Wales, England, Scotland, Northern Ireland right now, and tomorrow Ireland.
Yes. Have you got rules on this journey for yourself?
I try to avoid land vehicles like train or bus or in the air, the plane.
Yeah.
I just try to take ferries.
Okay.
And everything else is by walking.
And I suppose the big question is why? Why are you doing this?
I struggled myself with mental health issues and I tried lots and lots of things before I decided to walk. I taught myself blacksmithing and wood turning and a decent style of writing. And after nothing of it, after I came to the point, okay, this is not helping to this point I would like, I was asking for another solution, another way out. So yeah. I decided to walk.
Okay. Tell us a bit about yourself. So you, what was your original job?
I'm a lorry mechanic.
Yeah.
And to be honest, the lorry mechanic is a great job. You know, but sometimes in life things are not made for you. So I learned it and I figured out during the years doing this, that's not really my intention and my purpose in life. So I need to find something else. So I started this walk basically to reinvent myself a little bit.
Yeah.
To evolve.
Yes.
And to grow with all this experience which I'm making on the road.
And just back to the lorry mechanic, that was a family business.
Yeah, that was a family business. So, my father didn't force me to do it, but under the surface, some sort of family pressure was always there. So yes. I tried to fit in and it didn't work out.
Aha. Uh-huh. And because you did that, that's where you got your name, Mutsa, which translates as what into English?
The German word Mütze is basically translated to cap or hat in English.
Okay.
So, when I was learning the lorry mechanic, I learned not at home. I was learning in Hamburg in a huge lorry company. And the staff guys, they normally don't know the new guy from the first day. And I was a little bit picky back in the days because I had more hair on my head, believe it or not. So I set up a baseball cap to work under the lorries with all this dirt and grease. So and that's the reason the name
was called you Hat. You were called Hat. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, basically, yes.
Yeah, Hat. Give us the wrench there, Hat. Yeah, that's the way the conversation would have went. Was your dad a mechanic before you?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. My dad is a mechanic.
And his name is Peter?
Peter, yes. Peter Hinrich.
How does he feel about you setting off to walk across 40 countries in 5 years?
At first, he was not very happy. I think you can imagine, because the future of the company was gone now.
Yeah.
But when you feel this is not the right place for you, you have to change something. And yeah, that's why I.
You were saying you struggled with your mental health,
yes.
Lutze. What happened to you?
I felt worthless and had these suicidal thoughts and everything. So when I recognized by myself, okay, now you are planning the worst way out possible, change something else. And that's the reason why I left everything behind me and started this walking.
What age are you?
41.
Okay. And Lottie is company for you.
Yeah, yeah. She for her, it's the biggest adventure of her life.
And for you.
Yeah, for me too, yes.
Yeah. And you're depending on the kindness of strangers, are you?
Yeah. Every now and then. Sometimes I approach people when rain is forecast, for example. Then I ask people, hey, I'm doing this. And I explain myself in the first place. And after that, I ask for a roof, just a roof. And that can be many different things. The porch, garden shed, or sometimes on a farm in the stable.
Yeah.
And I ask for a bottle of water. So that's basically everything I ask for.
When you say there, you explain what you're doing.
What's
the pitch? Do you tell them everything? Do you tell them about suicidal thoughts and depression, or what?
In the first place, I just tell the people, hey, I'm walking around Europe, and I'm from Hamburg, near Hamburg, Germany, and I'm 13 months in now, and 3,600 miles are behind me.
Yes.
So these numbers change, of course.
Yes.
But when they get a jump on it, so then through the conversation, sometimes the other stuff comes up,
yes,
to explain a little bit more.
Yeah. And how are you feeling now? You're 13 months in, so you'd want to,
yes,
be feeling some of the positive, because you expected this to be a positive experience for you.
Yes.
And is it?
Yeah, it's great. It's absolutely, I learned so much about myself and about our society a little bit. So, and all these knowledge is helping me right now. So,
can you share some of that with us?
Since I started off, all these dark thoughts, they are basically gone. I had this, I saw this short video clip about a lady who told about depression and something like that. She was like, think about it, that depression, you move yourself into a situation in your life where you're stuck like a dead end road, and your body recognizes this, but above the surface, you won't, oh God, how to explain it in English right now. Now okay. I'm struggling.
Take your time. Take your time. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't know German, so I could have, if I did.
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
Yes, yeah.
When you're stuck in a dead end road.
Yes.
So your body sends you a message. So like, I don't like it here. Change something. Turn around. Do something else. So since I'm starting this walk, this is the big change. So this message is gone.
Uh-huh.
So basically, the lady was telling you, when you do something, your body is like, okay, now he got the message.
Yes.
I don't have to send it anymore.
Yeah.
So,
because we're all wrapped up, and I read a piece from an Irish singer there, James Vincent McMorrow, at the beginning of the program. We're all wrapped up in sort of aspirational things, what we think we should be doing to satisfy other people, maybe society, maybe notions that we have in our own heads. And it's very brave of you to leave all that behind.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And I'm wondering what the end, because you will do the 40 countries, 5 years will pass, all those thousands and thousands of kilometers, and you will be back to Hamburg.
Yes.
So what then?
I have no idea by now. It's kind of difficult because there are four more years to come.
Yes, right.
There are so many things that could happen. So basically, someone told me when I started off this walk, the person was like, okay, when you come back, you might go into the need to go into the motivation sector to help people with mental problems, to show them, hey, there's always another way out, a good way out, but it's up to you and you have to try something and you can...
Tell us about this Canadian man who inspired you, Jean-Billy Béliveau.
Yeah, Jean Béliveau. I hope I pronounced the name right.
Yeah.
I was looking when I made the decision I need to change something drastically. I was looking on Google, what did people do to avoid killing themselves? So I bumped into this Canadian guy in a newspaper article that was like, okay, this guy walked for 11 years. He visited 68 countries so I read this and then I visited his webpage, which is worldwidewalk.org, and so I read about and had a look at lots and lots and lots of pictures from all over the world. I was like, okay, I can walk by myself. And things came to move. I was never able to stop.
Right. And do you get lonely?
No, I've got my dog.
Right.
Okay. And sometimes I talk to myself here because, sometimes you need a proper advice.
But because you are alone with yourself a lot. And when you're alone with yourself, you're alone with your thoughts.
But
how
basically,
go on.
Yeah, but when you're on the road, basically you had some sort of empty because you just enjoy the countryside and listening to the sound of nature, maybe the small stones under your feet with all the scratching and all the squeaking of the trolley, the wheel a little bit, and the bird sings and the wind in the leaves and the branches, and that's distracts you a lot.
Yeah.
So and then. Every day you meet new people, you see new places, and so being alone, that's basically not that hard, because all this around changes every minute.
Yeah.
And a little bit slower than sitting in a car and rushing by, but it's a huge thing.
But you can take it in, you can soak it up.
Yes.
So you're going across the Greencastle, and then you're going down the West Coast. You've heard about the World Atlantic Way, have you? Are you going to follow that or what?
Sort of, a little bit. Since I left Larne, I followed the Wild Atlantic Coast Road. And when I switch the border to the Republic of Ireland, I will drop down from Greencastle to, what is it called? Oh, just a second,
I should have a map in front of me.
Yeah, I've got a map, but I can't find it. Bunkrana.
Yes.
And Bunkrana, there's another ferry to Rathmullen.
Yes.
And then I'm following the shoreline again and walk this the north west corner of Ireland down to Donegal and Sligo. From Sligo, I will drop straight through the country to see a little bit from the island center. The tourism is here more at the coasts everywhere.
Yes.
And I try to walk through the country to...
I see, to get...
What a person in England said, to meet the real Irish people.
Okay.
Not the all the time the persons who are... in conversation with tourists, you know.
Yes. Okay, so
don't get me wrong. That
no, they're nice people too. They're nice
people
too.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. You have to be careful, Mutsa.
Really.
Otherwise,
he didn't call us real.
Well, you're the German guy I heard on the radio. You don't like us. Yeah. Salvatore Ambulando, a quote from Saint Augustine. It means you solve your life's problems via walking. That's from a Kerry listener.
Yes.
So there you go. I love your description of just listening, walking, listening, even the pebbles underfoot and the trolley and the birds and all of that. And we'll talk again, Moots, if you don't mind. I'm fascinated by your odyssey. Yeah. And mind yourself and take care. And how will people recognize you if they pass you on the road?
It's quite easy. My trolley is yellow. I'm wearing high-vis trousers.
Yes.
So Lottie is wearing a high-vis vest.
Okay.
So you can't miss us.
And you have a cap, of course. You have a cap. Mootza.
Yeah. Not now.
Not now. Okay. No Mootza. Right. Okay.
It's somewhere in my bags.
Right. Okay.
So, there's a cap with me.
The weather's going to get good. The sun's going to shine. So you probably should get that cap out of the bag. Okay.
The summer's coming.
Yeah. Right. Right. Mootza. See ya. Mind yourself.
Yep.
Bye. Thanks for talking to us. Bye.
And
bye.
Thank
bye,
you.
Bye. Bye. Thank you. Yep. Now, just a reminder about our quiz. We're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock. The number is 0818-715-925. 0818-715-925. What is a cone with ice cream and a flake traditionally called? 0818-715-925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Vincent says, when I was a child, there were men that walked the roads, many suffering mental health issues. Instead of being incarcerated, they took to the road. There you go. I never heard that one. I heard of people taken to the bed, okay, but not to the road. And Saline says, the street number of the shop in England that invented the 99 was 99. Not sure what county. He had flakes he needed to use, so he started putting them in his ice cream cones. That's another theory, Saline. We're sitting here now with a young filmmaker, Finn Boylan, from Bray in County Wicklow, who has a very interesting story to tell us. He's just back from spending 7 weeks in Ukraine, documenting the lives of those in the midst of the war. How are you doing, Finn?
How's it going, Ray? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. So you were living in where? Berlin, was it?
I was living in Berlin, correct.
Right, and war broke out in Ukraine. So what happened next for you?
Well, there was only one way I was going. It was east, and many motivations drove me that direction, I would say. But I'd say the main ones are, I have a master's in filmmaking. I'm a student of history, studied a bachelor's here in UCD 8 years ago. And that coincided with the Maidan Revolution, the annexation of Crimea and the outbreak of war in the east. So I was glued to that in my final year of my studies in 2014. And yeah, basically been following this conflict for 8 years. And when the war broke out on the 24th of February, I knew which way I was going. And I also, just before the war, set up my own film production company. It existed only on paper as soon as the war broke out. So I said, all right, let's go.
Finn Films.
Finhouse Films, it's called.
Finhouse Films, right.
Finhouse Films, yeah.
So in your head, you were sort of, this is your day, this is your moment. All your roads have been leading to this.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, it wasn't my first hotspot I'd ever been to. I mean, I've been to West Bank, West Sahara, Gaza, Kashmir, Nagorno-Karabakh in Armenia. Also the two breakaway regions in Georgia as well, South Ossetia and Abkhazia. So
let's find out the motivation behind that then. So at what stage in your life did you decide that you wanted to document conflict? Because most people run away from it.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much every single nation state that exists on this planet exists as a result or an outcome of conflict. Even the Irish nation in itself is a result of conflict. And you could say, if you want to look at a nation that doesn't exist as a result of conflict, you could probably just point to Tibet. And the only reason that they aren't recognised by a single country around the world is because they never played the nation state building game of declaring independence, fighting a war of independence, or, you know, any of this. So, I mean, to run away from conflict, I mean, you can't shy away from it. It will eventually find you. And, you know, conflict can often breed growth. I mean, the Big Bang, for example.
Right.
The moon crashing into the moon crashing into the earth, bringing our tidal systems into sync. I mean, conflict is a part of life.
Yes, I understand
As much as peace is.
Yeah, but military conflict it sort of goes hand in hand with danger. And most people, given the choice, would avoid it. But you went into the jaws of it, if you like. So you're there, war breaks out. What, do you go straight into Ukraine?
I tried to find a story to bring me there originally. And I was in Berlin when the war broke out, and there was 500,000 people protesting in Brandenburg Gate when the war kicked off on the 24th. And I met an acquaintance, somebody I'd met at a few parties before. He's an American fella, Thomas Humphreys, Irish name, but his mother is German. She's a German diplomat, and the father was a lieutenant colonel in the American Armed Forces. So the two of us got together. He said he wanted to, he's a chemistry student, so there's a lot of connections to doctors and antibiotics and everything. So the two of us put our heads together and organized an aid mission. And I wanted to kind of film this story because you know, an American son of an American soldier and a German diplomat, kind of represent the post-war dynamic. The NATO alliance is kind of personified in this character. Right. So I came back here. I hadn't been home to Ireland in almost 3 years. I was in Africa for a year in Mali. And then I got back to Spain and Corona broke out. So I hadn't seen my family in almost 3 years. So I came back here before I decided, knowing that I was going to Ukraine, I came back to see my family for a week. And my father helped me fundraise and we got together 13 grand. And my friend also got together around the same. So nearly 30 grand in aid. And he organized with his chemistry connections in the universities, some doctors to buy us tourniquets, saline solutions, syringes, antibiotics, chest seals for gunshot wounds. And yeah, we drove this to Lviv. They dropped all the gear in Lviv to the Zadarovy Agency, which is an NGO working for the Ukrainian Department of Health. And they basically turned around and I said, see you later, guys. And that was the start of my journey into Ukraine.
They were going back to Germany and you were staying on.
Yeah, so they thought I was absolutely mental.
With your gear.
With my gear, with my camera, my mics, my radio mics, my tripods and my body armour.
And you said earlier on that you needed a story. So that part of your story was gone. So you needed a new story to focus on. What was that?
It happened pretty quickly. I was I took the last beer out of the car before I said goodbye to the lads as they drove away. And I was sitting down in the square with all my gear, my pressed body armour. And I was sipping on this beer wondering, OK, I'm in Ukraine now. What the hell do I do now? And I was sipping the beer no more than 5 minutes. At this time, I didn't know that alcohol was illegal in Ukraine at the time because the Ukrainian government don't want soldiers drinking and shooting each other accidentally.
Yeah.
So I didn't know alcohol was illegal at this time. I'm sipping on a Kronenbacher German beer. And then 5 minutes later, I hear an Irish accent going, hey, pal, where'd you get that beer? And lo and behold, was a fellow Wicklow man. And he was with some foreign fighters. And so the story continued with him and an American and a Swede onto.
So these are they called mercenaries or what are they?
Well, mercenaries would be they're soldiers. Yeah. They would go to any conflict regardless of its
but these
moral
guys
compass.
Yes,
they were there to join up and help in any way possible. Now, the Irish fella didn't have any military experience, but he was tagging along with some American Marine and a Swedish sniper. But yeah, you wouldn't class them as mercenaries because they were actually looking to join up and be a part of a nation state's army. So once you're in an actual nation state's army under the command of government, you are not considered a mercenary.
And so these are fascinating people, aren't they? And they make good topics for documentaries.
It is, yeah. It's a question of access. It takes time for them for you to build your trust with them, you know? And there's so many journalists out there that are looking for the quick soundbite, you know, the two-minute soundbite action sequence, bam, send it to the live stream to the studio for 5 o'clock. So
that's the way the world's gone, isn't
it? Yeah, so a lot of journalists would fail to get this kind of access. But in the end, I ended up following them around for nearly a month.
Right.
And was with them, with the American and the Swedes, training, watching them train territorial defence in Kiev. And then I was down also with them in Mykolaiv on the front line.
So they were training with the Ukrainian army?
They were training fresh recruits coming in for the territorial defence, correct? And they trained about 2,000 of them in about a month.
Right.
And then they got a little bit tired of this and wanted to see some action, so they joined some volunteer battalions in the south to go and get into the fight.
So tell us about those volunteer battalions. They weren't official Ukrainian army then?
They're not official. There's many, many volunteer battalions. You'll see probably yellow and blue armbands, tape around the arm. This represent the regular Ukrainian army. But if you see green tape wrapped around someone's arm, it's a volunteer battalion. They are kind of organized and coordinated by the Ukrainian military, but they don't answer directly to the Ukrainian military. So they're almost like a paramilitary force in a sense. But
I was looking at some of your footage and there were guys there with Union Jacks in yellow and blue.
Yeah.
So that is that what people did? They had their national flag, but in yellow and blue.
That you see that quite a bit, yeah, actually, yeah. It's a way to show, you know, your nation as your foreign fighter supporting the Ukrainian cause. But yeah, I met a lot of British there, a lot of Americans, a lot of Swedes, a lot of Norwegians, a couple of Irish.
Any common themes coming through from them, their stories?
Yeah, I'd say the most common theme would probably be they don't want to hear the sound of air raid sirens coming over their own hometowns, you know, especially for the Swedes. The Swedes have a lot of paranoia about Russia. You know, Kaliningrad, the exclave on the Polish border, is not far away. A lot of Finns would say the same thing. You know, there's always this kind of fear that it could come their way. And for the British, you know, I think the British don't really have a good relationship with the Russians in general.
And
so,
would you have suspected any of them of just having ulterior motives? This was an opportunity to fire guns.
I mean, in Lviv, you met a lot of these characters, these Call of Duty warriors, these airsoft.
Call of Duty warriors.
These guys who play a lot of PlayStation games and think they're the cheese, and go over to Lviv and cross the border and think they're absolutely mad for it. And what happened in the first week I was there, there was a Foreign Legion base very close to the Polish border, about 30 kilometres north of Lviv. And a bunch of these Egypts arrived and were with their phones doing TikToks and selfies. And the Russians geolocated that position and blew the hell out of it. And about 30 of them were killed in the first week I was there.
I remember that report.
Separated the weak from the herd, basically.
Yes, yeah.
All the professional soldiers, like the ones I was following, they got the hell away from the Foreign Legion after this. They didn't want anything to do with it and found other ways with volunteer battalions to join up. And all those airsoft warriors or those weekend warriors turned pack bags and went home.
In looking at some of your footage, you witnessed dead bodies within feet of you.
I witnessed a lot of stuff, yeah. Yeah.
And did you witness people being shot dead?
I didn't see anybody being shot dead, but I seen in Mykolaiv the direct aftermath of shelling that I witnessed a little bit above, maybe half a kilometre away in a frontline trench, shells coming in and then, you know, bodies being pulled out of there. So I didn't see anybody directly being blown to bits. And that's
saw dead bodies.
A lot of dead bodies, but I just like to say there's a definite difference between witnessing dead bodies around the place and seeing life being snatched away in front of your eyes. It gives you it's much more profound impact on you. I mean, I seen 5 or 6 years ago, I witnessed a terrible car accident. A little girl died right in front of my eyes and her lifeless body landed in front of me. And that stays with me far more than anything I saw in Ukraine.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a big difference between the aftermath and then witnessing life snatched away in front of your eyes. It gives you a great sense of your own mortality. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
But in terms of what I saw, I mean, some horrific stuff. I mean, you only get a sanitized version of stuff on the news. You can't. There's a lot you can't show, obviously. You know.
But even those pictures of you looking over the precipice into a sort of a huge crevice where a bridge had been blown up. And there was a car there. It's just that you're right. We don't see those scenes in news because it's all very quick and edited together. But when you linger on those, you just realise the gravity and the tragedy of what's happening.
Well, that bridge in particular, that's the bridge over the Bucha River that separates Irpin from Bucha. And that shots that you saw on my trailer for my documentary Forsaken Frontier. That was the day of the liberation of Bucha. So directly,
were you there?
Yeah, I was there for the liberation. I was there for the 2 weeks, the last 2 weeks of the battle for Kiev, and then for the 2 weeks after the liberation. So that footage you see from my trailer for the documentary, that is the day of liberation before we went across to Bucha on the other side of the river and witnessed hell on earth, essentially.
Go on.
I mean, just what can I say? Bodies everywhere. You'd be walking around the street, you'd see, dogs eating people's faces, bodies just left on the streets, and people who fled, packs of dogs roaming around eating people's faces. It's just horrific, you know.
You need to mind yourself, Finn.
Yeah.
No, because like I remember hearing, and I'm sure they still do it, but like the Irish Army, if journalists were going out to war zones, they would bring them down to have a course they do to prepare them for seeing dead bodies and the smell of death and all that sort of thing. And it's to make sure that people don't suffer PTSD afterwards. But you've had none of that, have you?
No, I haven't had any of this. No. Correct.
Yeah.
But I know, I find when you're in it, you're in it. You know, you don't have time to think about these things. You know, especially when you're being shot at or you're in the thick of it, you just go from A to B, B to C. And for me, I have a job to do. It's to follow my characters, to follow the story and to get the shots needed to tell that story. So I'm very much switched on in terms of what I have to do, and I don't think about anything else. A to B, B to C, and if trouble arises, get the hell out of there.
Okay.
It's only when I found it more difficult now to go through all my footage and edit it all together. Like when you're in a more relaxed, safe environment in front of your PC, in front of your computer, that's when the emotions can come out. So I found it more difficult to edit my footage than to actually live it.
Right. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder what that says about the human condition and the human brain. Because you're not on that adrenaline rush, you see, when you're sitting down.
No, I mean...
So the brain acts differently when it's fight or flight?
Absolutely. I mean, I didn't feel any ounce of fear in any of the situations I experienced. It was, I have a job to do, get the shots, get the material, okay, tell the story and survive it all. And yeah, it's only when you come out of it. Adrenaline really is a fascinating
drug. Isn't
it? It's a fascinating drug, but you can experience adrenaline fatigue, which is what I started to experience after the 7 weeks. My body slowly started to give up. My brain was always active. I was only getting 4 hours sleep a night, but you know, you'd wake up to the sound of shelling or wake up to an air raid siren. Or
you had the luxury of being able to turn your back on it and come home.
Yeah, of course. And you know, unfortunately the Ukrainian people don't. They're the ones living it. I was just a witness, so for me to complain or to say how it affect me, I don't want to talk
but that's it. But it is important as well. So how many hours of footage did you get?
I'd say maybe 150 hours of footage. I have plenty of interviews. You know, 7 weeks is a long time, and 7 weeks in a war zone feels like 7 months.
Yeah. You know, it's what happens with that now? What?
Right now, I'm editing a bunch of teaser trailers together, and my working title for my documentary is Forsaken Frontier. And the reason I chose this title is because this war has been going on since 2014. Like I said, my final years of study in history was 8 years ago when Crimea was annexed. And the West turned its back on it. We let Putin do it. We let the war in the East and Donbass break out, and we forgot about it. We left it there, you know, to one side, and we continued on with our Western problems, and it's festered, and look what's happened now. And now the risk is, you know, we could do it again. We're paying for it, but right now the West are paying for it at the petrol pump, in the supermarket, for the price of our bread. But, you know, they're paying for it in their lives and the lives of future generations. So...
Right. Well, let us know when you have the finished product. I'd love to see it. And mind yourself, Finn Boylan from Bray. Thanks so much for coming in. Thank you.
No worries. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Anish Darshan and the Preve Skelton and Ogdala Mike O'Fina. Gurama, good Mike. Thank you very much. 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Kevin has been on. He says, tell Mutze, the German guy, when passing through Kincastle, if he rings me, I'll give him a meal and a place to stay for a night. So there you go. We'll sort that out. Thank you for that. Now, it's time for our Reel in the Ears quiz. We have two quizzers standing by and we have a prize. And today it is a two-night stay in the Ballina Manor Hotel. Stunning views of the River Moy. You get B&B and then on one of the evenings, dinner in the Ridgepool restaurant overlooking the famous River Moy. And you get surf lessons in the Seven Wave Surf School. And you get a €50 Ballina Chamber Shop local voucher. And it's all to promote what North Mayo has to offer. Northmayo.ie. Hello, Bree de Mahon.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. You're in Blanchardstown.
I am indeed.
You're back home, are you? You were on the road earlier on.
I was, yeah. I'm home now for the evening. Yeah.
Right. What do you do that has you on the road?
I'm a sales rep.
Aha. What do you sell?
Oh, lots of different things. Yeah. Oh.
Okay, right. I won't pry anymore. And where do you sell these lots of different things? In lots of different places. In lots of different places. Yes, yes, yes.
Exactly,
yes.
Yeah.
And who's at home? Lots of different people. Yes, okay.
No. Right. No, you're wrong there. No one. I'm on my own.
Right, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And if you win this, you're going to give it to?
Well, I haven't completely made up my mind.
Okay, right. So you don't want to say that either. Okay, this is going really well. This conversation. Yeah.
I might go with a friend.
You might go with a friend. Okay, right.
Yeah.
And do you want to plug the son's clothing shop?
Oh, Declan. Yeah, he has a men's clothing shop down in Bibsborough. It's called Collar and Cuff.
Collar and Cuff. Great name. Yeah.
Yeah, Collar and Cuff. Yeah. When he came back from Australia a few years ago, he opened it up, and it was doing really well till COVID hit, and now he's back open and he's flying, doing all the postponed weddings and
reunions
and all that.
Great, brilliant.
Yeah, he's flying.
And who's back from Albufeira?
Oh, we all are. My daughter and her husband and Cian and Erin and Declan and Anya and Ellie and Sadie. Right. Yeah, we all went.
How long were you there for?
10 days.
Nice.
It was great. Yeah, it was lovely.
You got the weather and all that, and you're...
We did indeed. Yeah, it was great.
Rejuvenated and sun-kissed and all that. Yeah,
something like that. Yeah,
you're up against Sinead Donnelly in Rathfarnham. How are you doing, Sinead?
Hi, Hi, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. So there's a new arrival in your house recently.
A puppy. Yes. He's 9 months old now at this stage, so he's still very much in the puppy stage, but definitely part of the family.
Yeah, and what breed is he?
Well, he was a rescue pupsy. We weren't entirely sure, but they reckon he's a cross between a Wheaton Terrier and a Yorkie.
Right.
So he's, but no, he's gorgeous. He's just a bit wild, but my husband's out walking him at the moment, so that would quiet him down for a while.
And what age was he when you got him?
We got him when he was around 8 weeks old.
Okay, so you have him 7 months or so.
Exactly. Yeah. More than that. We have him more than that.
More than that. Right. Okay.
Yeah, he's just, he's getting his first grooming next week, so
right.
Big excitement.
Big excitement, yeah.
I know.
As well as Toby and the husband, Brendan, who else is at home?
So there's Ryan and Faye. Ryan is almost 8 and Faye is almost 6.
Right. Okay. So they're in what classes? What?
Ryan is in first class in Ballyroan and Faye is in our junior infants in St. Patrick's.
Right. Okay. Now, you know the deal with this Breeda and Sinead.
Yeah.
Three clips each. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. And if you go for a shorter clip, it's more difficult, so you get 2 points. So whoever gets the most points is the winner. And if it's drawn points, we go to a tie-break question. Okay, good luck to you both. Here we go. Breeda Mahon. The year is 2011, which is 11 years ago. And we're starting at the movies. Would you like a long clip or a short clip?
I think I'll go long, Ray.
Go long. Okay. In 2011, this film about maids and their employers in Mississippi starred Viola Davis and Emma Stone. Can you name it? And here's your long clip.
But it's time for me to retire. You're my last little girl.
No!
Baby, I need you to remember everything I told you, okay?
Okay.
You remember what I told you?
You were kind. You were smart. You were important.
No,
Ray, having a clue.
No.
Having a clue. No, would it be a moviegoer?
Oh, not at all. Right, The Help. The Help was the name. I think it was based on a book, wasn't it? Yeah, it's an adaptation of a book. Okay. Right, Sinead, let's see how you do. 2011 at the movies, long or short?
I'll go long.
You go long? Okay. In that year, 2011, this comedy about a group of women in a lead up to a wedding was one of the biggest films of the year. Can you name it? Here's your long clip.
We change all the time. I think we stay the same, but grow, I guess, a little bit.
I think if you're growing, then you're changing.
But I mean, we're changing from who we are, which we always stay as.
Not really. I don't think so.
I think so. I know.
Bridesmaids?
It is Bridesmaids, yes. Kristen Wiig and Rose Byrne featuring that clip. And our Chris O'Dowd, that's where he sort of came to world attention. So you get a point for that. Okay, okay. Early days. Breeda, back to you. Music from 2011. Long or short?
Go short, Ray.
Go short on this one. Okay, more confident with this. This song was a huge hit for an American singer. Can you name the singer or the song? Here's a short clip.
There's nothing wrong with loving who you are, she said, because he made you perfect, babe.
Who's that?
Lady Gaga.
It is. Born This Way. She called it her freedom song, and you get 2 points for that. Well done. Sinead, music from 2011, long or short?
I'll go short.
You go short. This was one of the biggest hits of the year. Can you name the song or the group? And here's your short clip.
Everyone else but you. Oh, baby.
Long enough, you're like, oh my God. Hanson?
No.
Who was it?
One Direction.
Oh my God.
What makes you beautiful? Yeah.
Oh yeah, okay.
Okay, let's see where we are now. You're on one, Sinead. You're on two, Breeda.
Okay.
So, if you go short and get it right, Sinead can't catch you. However, if you go long, get it right, you're on three. Sinead goes short, gets it right, she's on 3-2, and we're in a tiebreak situation. So what do you want to do?
Look, I think I have to go short, Ray.
Okay, right. Go big or go home, as they say. In 2011, one of the most famous couples in the world got married in Westminster Abbey. Can you name them? And here is your short clip by way of a clue.
To have and to hold from this day forward.
To have and to hold from this day forward.
For better, for worse.
For better, for worse.
Who got married?
Kate and William.
It is Prince William and Kate Middleton. Yes, you get your 2 points. Which means, Sinead, you can't catch her.
That's okay, no problem. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Hi, Sinead. No problem.
I would have thought everybody knew One Direction, but then it's just we have people in our house that are of a certain age, so we've heard that song millions of times.
Yeah, I'm more a 90s girl.
You're more a 90s girl, you see. It depends, doesn't it? That's a,
Faye
and Ryan are too young.
Because
so,
not to worry.
You missed the whole One Direction thing. Okay, we're going to send you out a couple of Radar Show mugs, Sinead Donnelly and Rod Farnham. Lovely talking to you. Mind yourself.
You
see you now.
Bye.
Breed the Man in Blanchestown, you are off to North Mayo, to the Ballina Manor Hotel. Yes, it sounds glorious there. You're on the River Moy. You get the surfing lesson. I can see you hopping on a surfboard there. And you get the
my pass on that one, right?
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, and you get the €50 Ballina Chamber Shop local voucher as well, and you can find out what's in store for you at northmayo.ie.
That's great.
Great talking to you, Breeda. Well done. Congratulations. See you now. Bye. Bye.
Thanks,
bye. Bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, Holly Johnson, frontman with Frankie Goes to Hollywood, is on the way. But first, from 1984. Holly Johnson, good afternoon.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk to you. I'm just smiling here because I'm playing that song mid-afternoon. But there you go. That's the way the world has changed, because it was banned back in 1983 by the BBC.
Yes, but Afternoon Delight wasn't banned.
There you go. Yes. Yes. Why wait till the middle of a cold, dark night?
Indeed.
Great to talk to you. We've so much to talk about. You're coming to the Forever Young Festival at Palmerstown House Estate in Kildare. You're headlining Saturday night, the 16th of July. You've been there before, and you know that they love you down there.
Yes, well, I love them.
Yes.
They all had a ride on my love train.
Yes.
In Palmerstown Estate. It's in Nace, isn't it?
It is, just outside Nace. Yes, it is. It is.
It's a lovely place, and if we've got the weather like we have today, it'll be a festival. It's only the second one of Forever Young, but the first one went off with a bang. It was really good.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, just we better get this out of the way. Your younger brother, or your older brother, because we've a number of stories here, says, myself and a few girlfriends did the Magical Mystery Tour a few years back with Holly's brother as tour guide. He told us he was Holly's brother anyway. I need confirmation. Philippa.
Well, he does tell everyone he was my brother, but I'm not so sure. He could have been the milkman, for all I know.
Right, so you're not confirming or denying.
I'm not confirming or denying that, I'm afraid.
Right, okay. And then you were spotted back in the day in Matty Hayes' shop in Bennett's Bridge, County Kilkenny. So you lived in Ireland for a while, Holly, did you?
Yes, we lived in Boris, County Carlo, in the King of Leinster's house.
Right.
That was freezing cold and damp. And we got all the local ladies to make us woolly jumpers to keep us warm. We had a great time, though. There was a salmon farm there. And
yeah.
I did go to Kilkenny and work on a stall for a girl who did pottery.
Right.
For the day, that was one of the things I did. And we used to go to Dublin, obviously, and stay at Bloom's,
yeah.
Which I don't even think is there anymore. I'm not sure.
Don't think so. What year was this, Holly? What year was this?
This must have been 1986,
right.
The summer of.
Yeah, yeah.
It must have been. We were writing, we were writing songs there, and other bands had previously hired it, like the Thompson Twins, for example.
Yeah.
It was a nice place to stay. It was it's lovely. There are more beautiful parts of Ireland, of course, but it was very nice. We got on very well with the locals. There was a lot of crying Mary statues.
Yes, at the time, yes.
Around there, and we even went to a field to have a look, and people would just be standing there in awe, waiting for Mary, Mother of God, to cry.
Yes, yeah.
Which was a bit strange, but there you go.
There you go. That was big that summer. Listen, speaking about big, so to bring us right back. So I have the 12-inch Relax at home. I was just looking at it there. So it's nearly...
Which one? There's so many of them.
Oh, well, I'd like to think it's the original, Holly, but I'm not so sure. It has the Sex Mix on it. I'm looking at it here.
Is the original first one.
Is
but
it?
Then there was the New York or US mix, which was also very popular.
Yeah.
And a couple of others, I think.
Right. So that was released in October of 1983, and then it hit the charts and went to number one in January of the next year.
That's correct.
Can you bring us back to that time and you and Trevor Horn, who produced it, and everything that was going on at the time?
Well, we did a PA tour in 1983, places like the Camden Palace and various nightclubs up and down the country. And it wasn't taking off. It was hanging around the lower regions of the chart.
Yeah.
We'd already been on the Tube, the live Friday night program. And people enjoyed that. And one week we got the Tube again, and it went up a bit into the top 30, and that qualifies us for Top of the Pops. So we actually appear on the 20th anniversary or birthday of Top of the Pops,
uh-huh,
performing the song before it was banned by the BBC.
Uh-huh. Right.
Which is odd. They played it about 90-odd times before the penny dropped and they decided to ban it.
Right. Okay. And, of course, that was probably the best thing that happened for the song.
Well, excuse me, that's what they say. They think it got it to number one. But then after Two Tribes got to number one in the summer for 9 weeks, Relax came back into the charts and we held the number one and the number two spot concurrently, which was very odd. So by Christmas time, when The Power of Love had got to number one, the BBC relented and got us back for Christmas Top of the Pops to do it again.
What a year. What a year for you.
Well, it was pretty hectic, I have to say. But, you know, when you're 24 years old, you take things in your stride somewhat.
Yeah.
So it was a great laugh for us.
I was just reading about it and looking at footage and all that. It was like gay punk, that, you know, because it was, you were overtly gay. Which at the time was breaking all sorts of rules and regulations and boundaries, wasn't it?
It usually didn't like artists to be openly gay. I mean, there weren't many around. There was basically me and Paul Rutherford, and then a bit later on, Jimmy Somerville and Larry and Steve, who were openly gay also. So there was us. And then there was Bronski Beat in that year of 1984. But, you know, all the likes of Boy George and Mark Almond and the next year, the Pet Shop Boys, George Michael, they hadn't made a statement about their sexuality.
No.
Probably on advice of their record companies.
Yeah. Trevor Horn, of course, produced Relax and Two Tribes. And he was in the Buggles, wasn't he, Trevor Horn?
He was a Buggle, yeah. Buggle. He was the lead Buggle with funny coloured glasses, a bit like Timmy Mallet.
Yes, he did. A bit more talented.
Yeah, I think, everyone has their own talents
in
their own way.
Yes, you're right, Holly. You are right.
We can't plug Timmy off.
No. You're right. You're absolutely right. So I was reading as well that you know, It's a Sin was a major TV program. Was it last year? It plotted and dramatised that time in the UK and AIDS and everything that went with it. Did you watch that, Holly?
I did, but I found it very difficult to watch. I found it very emotionally moving, and I wouldn't say it was a pleasant experience for me, to be honest with you. It was a struggle to watch it.
And did you see friends of yours die from AIDS?
Oh, absolutely. I visited people in hospital in 1983 and 1984 in London, and, you know, I saw some terrible sights, really. Mm. It was shocking. And, you know, the way they were treated wasn't great. You know, food left outside the door of the hospital room and things like that. People, there was a lot of fear in the air.
Yeah, an awful lot of fear. And you are living with HIV yourself.
Yes, but I'm not here to talk about my health. I'm here to talk about the Forever Young Festival.
No, but
stop acting the bollocks.
Holly, I am genuinely interested in your story, and
that's sincere.
But I'm also going to tell people that you are headlining Saturday night at the Forever Young Festival in Palmerston House in Naas, and I watched your performance from when you were there in 2019. It was an amazing performance, and people loved you, and they're in for a treat if they go along, and they'll see not only Frankie Goes to Hollywood, but also Holly Johnson's solo stuff as well, Americano's Love Train, etc.
Oh, they'll get all the hits and more.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it'll be like when Frankie Goes to Hollywood played the RDS in Dublin on the first date of the world tour in 1985.
Wow, what was that like?
That was incredible. We'd never had such an amazing reception, apart from in Liverpool.
Yeah,
but
your hometown.
This was a much bigger venue, the RDS. It was absolutely fantastic. We couldn't believe it. The audience just went mental.
Yeah, yeah. Heady times.
They were.
Yeah. What's your favourite memory from those years? What, like there was Top of the Pops and there was Number One and Number Two. And you mentioned that, and you didn't mention, because I'm going to mention it now, that the only other group in the history of pop music who've managed to do that when charts mattered were the Beatles in 1968.
Well, also Gerry Marsden with his first three hits went to number one.
Right. No, but yeah. When you had Number One and Number Two.
Oh, yes, that's absolutely right.
Yes, that's absolutely right.
Yeah, you know, Gerry Marsden, his first three singles were number ones.
Yes.
And same as our first three singles were number ones. Poor Gerry is just passed away last year. Oh. I was at his memorial in Liverpool about a month or two ago.
Yeah.
But that was an amazing event. People forget, they always mention the Beatles, but they forget how brilliant and huge Gerry and the Pacemakers were.
And you did a cover of that, because that's on that 12-inch that I have of Relax on the B-side, is Ferry Across the Mersey.
That's absolutely right.
Yes.
It was the B-side of Relax.
And then we
did another version that included Paul McCartney, Gerry Marsden and the Christians for the Hillsborough disaster. Uh-huh. Was it 1987, was it? Or no, 1988 or 1989.
It was back in the news anyway recently because of how the Liverpool fans were treated at the Champions League final.
That's right.
Yeah. And you have sang with Paul McCartney.
Well, on a record I have.
Right.
I wasn't in the studio on the same time as him or Gerry or the Christians, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did meet them all at different times of my life.
Yeah. And you're looking forward to get back on the road, and I know you minded yourself. You had to during COVID. So you're doing outdoor gigs mainly. And is it good to be back up and seeing the faces and singing the songs?
Oh, I'm really looking forward to it, especially as the first one is in Ireland.
Yes.
And I'm hoping it'll be as good as the last one when I was there, because the audience were amazing. The audience deserved an award, really.
Yeah, best award of a festival goes to the crowd at the Forever Young Festival, Palmerstown. So it's Saturday night, the 16th of July, headlining Holly Johnson, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, all the songs, solo and band. Holly, it was a real pleasure talking to you.
You should come yourself.
Yes, no, I know. Yes, I probably will.
Get a day off from RTE.
Yes.
Yeah. If you can.
I'll be there in the front row.
I'll see you there.
Right. Mind yourself, Holly.
Fantastic. Thanks very much, Ray.
Good talking to you. Bye now. Bye. Oh, there's my sister was at the Frankie gig in the RDS and then met them afterwards at Bloom's Hotel. So there, that all stacks up. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.